Hey guys, we're here for Orange is the New Black, Season 5, Episode 5 and 6. We've got Sing It White Effie, and we've got Flaming Hot Cheetos, literally. That's coming up right now, Orange is the New Black here on AfterBuzz.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
The animal.
I can't.
I'm so sorry.
Trapped. The cage is full.
Keep it going, honey.
The cage is full.
The day is new. And everyone's waiting on you. And you got time.
Okay, I'm going to stop now.
Wow.
This
was worth it just for that. Oh, my.
Everyone that has been watching since the very beginning constantly get the made fun of, or people get annoyed or their ears hurt. But we do it every week. But we're very excited to have you joining us. First of all, before we get started, you can hashtag social media OITNBABTV. It's such a mouthful. So we'd love to hopefully get the chat up here on the big screen so we can hopefully interact with everybody, because there are definitely people that end up having a lot of questions, and we have questions. I end up having questions every time. I'm like, who is that person? What did they do in season two?
Speaking of who's that person, and they're probably wondering.
I know,
who's
we're
going
to get there in just a second. But before we do get to all that, I wanted to introduce the person to my left today.
Thank you. I'm Chelsea Galicia, and love the show. I've been so envious of you that you get to do this after show. And we were just next door doing our political
Trump
dealio.
Exactly.
And I found that there was a spot for me, and I am happy to be here and talk about the show that I really like. Thank you. For much of the same reason that I like talking about politics is why I love this show.
Absolutely. Where can I find you on social media?
At Chelsea Glacia.
Yeah, good Twitter. Deal. And of course, I'm Scott Moore, and you can find me at SMAN80, SMAN80. And yeah, that was something we had talked about last week, too, is basically a lot of the reasons that I love the show, even though it's escapism, it really brings attention and brings to light a lot of issues that are going on in the prison industrial complex that most people have no day-to-day interaction or have any clue about what's really going on.
As soon as, you know, I was I waited until there was four seasons, and then I watched all of them at once. So I don't know which season it was where the private prison company starts taking over, and I was like, okay, now I know what this show is really about. These people are genius, because what they did is they hooked you in with the characters that you can relate to. And then you care about what happens to them, that they're being given slop, that they're being given horrendous conditions to live in. And now you give a damn.
Right. It's brilliant. And as a viewer, as a fan of the show, how was it watching all kind of watching all four, because I've watched this since the very beginning, from season one, episode one, and we were here at AfterBuzz when their old studio track, so we were kind of watching it consistently. But how is it for a fan to have watched it sort of in bulk?
Binging. I loved it. I couldn't stop watching, and I just loved it. I'm glad, I guess, that I didn't stretch it out. And then what was really satisfying is, like, not long after I was done, Eric Holder, the former attorney general, or was it Loretta Lynch, who announced that the federal government was not going to renew their contracts with private prison companies. And I was like, I know people are going to think I'm crazy, but I think it is because of the consciousness that was raised from so many people watching Orange is the New Black. That doesn't happen by random coincidence. Same with, like, Brendan Dassey, his case going in a different direction because of Making a Murderer.
And people, like, watching it and
all
having
of a sudden
interest.
Just randomly, the tide turns in his favor, and it has nothing to do with the fact that so many people are thinking about this and commenting and caring about it. So it was just like my little validation that what we care about, the things that really impact us and the things that we talk about and share about, those things somehow, I don't know if it's woo-woo or magic or spiritual or whatever it is, but it seems to have an impact. It makes a difference until you get Jeff Sessions in, and then we're
all just screwed. Then it's all changed again anyways, because I was going
to
say,
so we're going to have to hope for some Jeff Sessions consciousness fairies.
Or just get somebody new in there in the next that 4 years that has to now reverse it all and clean up after them. But that said, so, you know, we're covering 5 and 6. We're kind of getting into the middle of the season now. And spoiler alert, just in case you reveal anything.
I'm going to try not to.
You actually finished the entire season.
Thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and we, you know, a couple years ago, we actually, like I was saying off camera, we had two panelists that had watched the entire season and would come in, and then two of us that would only watch per each week. And we went really hardcore about it. We, you know, for those of you that remember back at the beginning, we changed wardrobe. We really stopped down.
Dedication.
We had notes, and yet we would still always have a few times where we would accidentally say something about a future episode, and it was very tough. So now the past couple of seasons have been a little bit more low key, a little more conversational, and if we happen to slip about something, then that's okay too. But, you know, I really have liked the direction of this particular season. You know, the first couple of episodes, I was talking to the panelists that were here a couple weeks ago, and April and Sterling, who both had to be out of town this week, unfortunately, so they're not here. But we were talking about just, you know, at the beginning, we weren't quite sure where we were going with this, and because I didn't want to read anything for any spoiler alerts, we weren't sure, was this riot going to be the entire season? Was it just a one or two off, you know, episode, and then they're going to move on to something else? Was there going to be, you know, in seasons past, we've had sort of this villain character that you would have every year that would just be there and be this evil or crazy person or somebody that would then, you know, that would come to a head at the end, and they would have some kind of ending there and then start fresh the next season. And so far for me, it's like, wow, I wonder, who is that villain? And is it now, is it the, you know, because you were talking about the deplorable conditions and the women trying to get their demands met. So is that sort of the new villain? Is the private
Piscatella?
Well, that too. And I keep wondering what's going to happen with that. But it's like you're used to these.
Not to tell you.
I know, don't tell me. But I'm trying to figure
this
out.
This is my straight face.
That's your legal. That was in your court face when you were a lawyer. It's really hard to kind of figure out. Not trying to read into anything and not try to get any spoiler alerts. Exactly where they're going to go with this. And you know, again, the writing is so spot on. Mm-hmm. And half the time, I write down little quotes and everything from the episode because they're just so brilliant and they really have fleshed out these characters. And that's the thing I like about the writing with the show, because sometimes you can see, I don't want to call it lazy writing because I'm not a writer and I don't want to make, you know, assumptions, but you'll see certain times where you watch some sitcoms or other shows and basically two different characters say more or less the same thing or they talk the same way, which in real life just doesn't happen.
Yeah.
And that's what I love about this show is that these characters are so fleshed out that they talk and it's just so real.
Right.
And you really feel like they have their own personalities and you see that in their own kind of sense of humor and their own comments that are very distinct from the other characters. And that's what I've always loved about the show.
I have lived in LA my whole entire life. So I've seen people around. I was at the 30th anniversary of the feminist majority and I saw, oh, dear God, what is her name? The tall woman who was the warden before Caputo.
Oh, Figueroa.
Yes. Yeah. And I saw her, and I had like a gut reaction. Like, I so believe the characters that I just had the reaction that, you know, that was her. And talking to her, she's a completely different person.
She is. Fun fact, I actually had her on when we do the Spotlight interviews. We had her on here. Actually, when we were back in Encino, the old studio, and we had her, and I had one-on-one interview with her, and it was the same thing. It was like she was completely opposite. I was nervous. I was like, how is she going to be? And we had the loveliest conversation for over an hour. So smart.
Yeah.
So brilliant. And her cause is so great. And absolutely adored having her on.
So it just proved to me that these characters do an incredible job because I'm used to, it doesn't generally faze me. I'm like, oh, there's not. Yeah. But this one, I had a visceral reaction.
I mean, yeah. And the acting is just beyond words, speaking of writers. And I mean, they're just so incredible.
When you were saying that, you know, usually there's a villain.
Mm-hmm.
And who's the villain going to be?
Mm-hmm.
What occurred to me is actually, In this season, it's like more about the heroes.
And that's a good point. And that's a really good point, because it was so, you know, there was always that trope of here's that villain, here's this, and this is the evil thing going on. And you have these side stories. We always had that main sort of thread. And it's interesting to kind of see this. You see a lot more of the humanity so far in this season.
And we got hooked in by somebody who, you know, doesn't fit our stereotype of who walks, mm-hmm. who goes to prison. So mm-hmm. we felt somewhat relatable to mm-hmm. Piper. She goes in, right. and now she's just one of many that right. you care about. And now, like, Tasty is my hero, and just love her.
Absolutely.
I don't know if it was a conscious decision to make it where, you know, the white girl takes you in and then the black girl becomes the hero and that it's racial or anything like that. But there are, you know, other characters who are the more, you know, not even stereotypical, because if you look at our prison population, mm-hmm. who actually is in there,
right.
it is way too many blacks and right. it is way
it is too
many,
many people of
Latinos.
Color, and absolutely.
And so the show does it so beautifully that for all of us societally, we don't really have a lot of compassion for those people. But it has been done in a way that we have, I think, right. I don't think I'm alone in this, complete compassion for right. what they are yeah. going through, even though we have always known that black people and Latino people have been overly represented mm-hmm. in our prisons, and they, you know, it's not a great situation in there. There's no education and, you know, that kind of stuff. And most of us have just not cared.
And the recidivism, because they get back out and they can't get a job, or they're, you know, they don't have anywhere to go back
and
live.
You have to mark that you're a felon and you can't get a job, you can't get housing.
So then it gets to almost be easier to then go back to prison because – and Tasty even says that too, you know, and we get to that in episode 6 with her flashback and everything else. But, you know, there are so many people where – and Aleda's had this in seasons past too, where it's like, that's home. You know, your family's there, your friends, you have structure, you have 3 meals a day, you have shelter.
I don't think that people consciously choose
no,
it.
No, absolutely not.
And there are
not.
Some people who believe that people right. consciously want
no,
that.
No, of course not. Yeah. But to what you're saying is with that recidivism of where it's like, it almost becomes not easier, but in a way they know that
it's familiar.
I don't want to say comfortable, because it's not, because it's not enjoyable.
I mean, it's like the same thing that we, you know, we hear that we end up like marrying our like parent or something who we didn't necessarily like, but that's what was comfortable and familiar.
And what you're familiar with and what you're used to. And
even if you didn't like it right. and you swore that you would do anything, but strangely,
it's
have such
know.
An affinity for mm-hmm. familiarity that
exactly.
that's what we're going to end
it's
up with.
It's human nature. Yeah. And I think you also bring up a good point, which we haven't really talked about, is kind of having to go into this world through this privileged white woman that wouldn't necessarily be the type of person that you would think would be in prison, that it would have been a harder sell, unfortunately, which is, you know, but I think now, because of a show like this, has now opened doors that you could maybe have it start off with a Tasty and be totally drawn in. But I think, like you said, to be able to have brought in a population that just didn't care about people in prison because they had no connection to it at all, that was a way to do it. And we have talked about this on the show, is that, you know, in seasons past, it was so focused on her and her storyline, and everyone was sort of the back burners of it. And now it's sort of like, well, I don't even really care if she's in it or not, because she doesn't have the most interesting storyline or the most interesting character out of all these women. And
I mean, I don't remember them doing any background
on
her this season.
No, I mean, to this point, I mean, I haven't either, but they haven't really in a while. And that's the whole thing. And I've said this before. It's like, her storyline is tired. I don't really care about her relationship with Alex and the on again, off again. Are they not? You know, because there's so many other great actors on the show and so many other great stories to be told. And it's just it's such a wonderful thing that they've been able to bring this to reality.
They are making demands. Mm-hmm. And I wish I could like put out a survey. How many of you are completely behind them? Like, you mm-hmm. want this for them almost as badly as they do. Because that's all I feel, is I want them to be able to have decent food and a place
right.
to learn, and to have correctional officers who aren't, you know, grabbing them or even giving them inappropriate looks and menacing them and searching them and just, mm-hmm. you know, all these things. And it's really I don't know if it makes it more or less realistic for me that there is such an emphasis on justice for Poussey.
Mm-hmm.
On the one hand, I'm like, that is just, it's beautiful and it's honorable, mm-hmm. and I love that, and they should go after that. And then at the same time, I'm like, I think that the other things are sort of the more realistic
right. Absolutely.
Demands
Absolutely.
That are going to
Absolutely.
Make
I
a
mean,
difference in
I
life.
Think, and we'll get to it too as we delve a little deeper, but I think, you know, it's part of the issue is it's... There needs to be an overall reform with, you know, what happened with Bailey and how that came to be with the accidental death of Poussey. And that's an overall bigger theme than just that one incident, not taking away from that one incident because it is incredibly important and you can see where it comes from.
Can you tell me what Bailey's, like, doing around this time?
He's really having a hard time dealing with it all.
Yeah, okay.
You know,
so,
where he basically gets... Well, I assume he got drunk and got himself in the you know, overnight at
the
jail.
I'm not going to confirm or deny anything. But what I will say is that they did this brilliantly because when Poussey died, you want to be really angry at the officer.
Right, of course.
And what they do is they have an officer who feels intense remorse.
Remorse. It feels horrible.
And you realize that, hopefully, I don't know if everybody has realized, or at least I did, that... It wasn't a conscious choice. It was the situation he was put in.
Right.
A dangerous situation that we all know that the more overcrowded they are, these prisons are, the more likely these situations are to happen, the more endangered the inmates are, the more endangered the correctional officers are. So you see that really this is a symptom of the system and not any one person in it.
Right. And sort of saying like the overall needing the system reform of how they deal with these type of situations, not again taking away from that incident because it is horrible, but... For him to have faced criminal charges for it seems to be misplaced in the overall thing, although there should be something that happens for him to be, like, tried for murder or something like that.
Involuntary sort of, manslaughter sounds about right.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, those things, yes, but, like, as
but
a
there's
conscious...
But there's a little bit of a... There's protection.
Right.
And as you can see in the real-life cases of police officers... killing people more violently
absolutely.
More egregiously.
Right. And
Philando
just taking
Castile.
Out a, right, with a gun and just going out and having their way with...
Right, and no convictions.
With no convictions at all and getting off. I can't quite... I don't know. Maybe you have better eyes than me with the live chat, but...
Let's see. Can we blow it up a bit? Okay. Oop. A little... Do-do-do-do.
Well, it's good to have Lindsay. It's good to have you here joining us. Just rewatching the show. Wow.
Clementine Diva.
Ah, interesting.
Season one does feel like a long time ago, and I only watched it like a year ago.
So much has changed since then. But yeah, you know, we're seeing Bailey in this time in episode 5 and 6 really struggling with this. And you know, it kind of goes back, and we've talked about this too before, is where you really see that fine line, and you said where it's disproportionately, you know, for this women's prison of women of color being there, and you see that a lot of the people that are supposed to be the good people, like the COs, like the guards, like the administration, have also done really horrible, terrible things, and the difference is these women were caught. And I think that's always been a really good job that this show has done, is being able to show that it's not just a black or white, not even just skin color, but a black or white, like a moral, this is good and this is bad. And when you're bad, you go to prison. And when you're good, you know.
I mean, hopefully people see that, like, these COs may go in because, you know, they need a job and they, you know, don't have great options. And they seem like decent people who just want to work hard.
And then they go in there. A lot of people.
They go in there and they become part of the system and they come out turning like jackasses.
And they also have the power trip of being in there and not
egos
having to have
inflamed.
Anyone kind of keep that in control.
And so if you can see that the correctional officers become a product of the system, perhaps you can also see how the inmates become a product of the system.
Right, and how they become a part of the system in a different way.
Yeah.
And you see them go through and be shuttled through. So it is, and again, I think the show does a brilliant job about it. Just going over the general recap of episode 5 with Sing It White Effie. You know, we start with the power back on, and so everyone's watching the news now. You have Boo and Nikki and Morello, and now the big thing on the news on episode 5 is like, oh, Judy King's held hostage.
And this is the helicopter
gets the
footage.
Yes, this was the helicopter from, yes. So this is like the big thing.
And it looks like a terrorist.
Yes, and that's exactly what happens is now the governor is Governor Hutchinson is now calling the MCC boss and basically saying, you know, why are the Al-Qaeda terrorists torturing our red state chef, you know, already with the lines. But again, very much in like Judy King's the very popular everyday woman who's been there in the low security prison. And now they're, you know, they don't want anything to go wrong here. They don't want the bad optics, which, you know, they're like, so let's not go storm in there. So that's the whole reason why they haven't had the police storm in there to begin with, to get this right under control, because they didn't want anything to happen to her. And she was already basically released and was going to be leaving that day with her lover, boyfriend, husband, and, you know, the whole crazy side story. So, you know, she's now has been trapped during this riot trying to find her way out. She tried to run away at the end of, I think it was episode 4 now, but this was previous episode, and didn't quite make it to the fence, couldn't scale over the fence before the women caught her. You know, I think part of the reason, and we talked about this last week, what are your theories as to why the women didn't want her to escape? Because she was better collateral to be in the prison?
Absolutely.
That's what I said, too. I mean, it just made more sense because, you know, she needed to be in there as collateral.
They're not stupid. They know that the way that they're all dealt with is going to be different knowing that she's in there.
Right.
Because people are going to be watching.
And that's the whole thing, is they know that they're getting the attention. They're getting the media coverage. They know that she's also had her special treatment in the prison. So they feel like having her there helps to get their demands
absolutely
heard, and helps to bring more media attention than it would be if, you know, she was released. You know, in this episode, we've got everyone sort of in their different worlds. We have the women that have now gone out to the lawn and sort of made their home out there. These are the women that don't really want to be involved in the day-to-day stuff of the riot. They're kind of wanting to keep, you know, hanging low. They don't want to be seen so that they can hopefully go through this unscathed. My whole thing is, though, is how can they say that they're unscathed and you know, try to get out on their time and not have any more time added to their sentences, because no one's really there
really knows
to monitor, to say what's really going on. So I'm like, I don't know what their theory is.
Unless, you know, they do investigations after.
Right, and they're then, like, well, these women were...
And they have the other inmates
right,
point fingers. Like,
right.
You tell us who was really
who
the
was
leader
really
of this.
And who was
and
out.
And we'll help and, you. And you do yeah. that enough times, and that's and probably get, what they're thinking is going to go down. Yeah.
So, I mean, so you've got a lot of women that are like, okay, and like Alex and has set up camp out in the lawn here. Is like, okay, I don't want to deal with being involved with this, and you have Daya coming out there too, because she's basically like, I just want to get through and get out. And so you have quite a few women that are out there right now. You've got you know, obviously Judy King trying to get out, and I love their whole lines. They have some great lines there. This is the episode though where we had the flashback with Janae, which I also thought was really good too. And we opened with her as a young elementary school student, middle school student probably, talking about to Kill Mockingbird, and she's in class. And it kind of sets up sort of what you were just saying earlier, of the system and how it forms people and where they're able to go and what they're able to do. And we see this very clearly in Janae's flashbacks here and what she had to go through. And you see it with the very elitist, rich, fancy school.
So this is the one where she got the tour.
Yes, of the fancy school.
Gotcha.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And you know, you see the difference of that school and those people having to go through. And we've talked about them not having any issues because money's not object to them, and they've got their parents that have the connections, and they're just going to be able to be set up for life.
Yeah.
And
it feels so unjust.
Yeah, it really does. And then you see that, and this is a perfect point, is because through her flashbacks, you know, from starting out from being really on top of being clearly a very smart student, accelerated, basically can move forward and do anything she wants. She sees the fancy prep school, and she sees sort of like it seems great and exciting at first, and so over the top with everything. They've got this whole huge musical
theater
yeah. and they're like, you know, rehearsing, and she's seeing all this, and it's just so over the top and fancy. And you see that, and then you see her towards the end kind of having this whole problem of being able to realize she's not ever going to be at that point because the system is working against her. So her grades start sliding.
Yeah.
And she's
disillusioned.
Not doing well.
With
exactly.
It.
Yeah. And she's feeling like, what's the point of even doing this when these people can just roll in with their fancy prep school and have their parents with all unlimited money and can get them into the college they want and have the connections to get them their job. And she's always going to have to work twice as hard
for half the results
as like her teacher says. And she's feeling hopeless. She feels kind of bring up with the political thing with Trump, but, you know, feeling like the system is rigged. And a lot of ways it is for a lot of
people.
Bernie
said that too.
Yes. But I'm saying like how he always says, how he says it now.
But this is the real rigged.
But this is the real rigged. And unfortunately, Donald Trump is not rigged like in this thing. So you see that, you know, going through that and feeling just really hopeless and hurt. And it's just so sad because I think about that teacher too. Just think about when you have a student like that and
she's doing everything she can.
She can.
Yeah. To help mold her and inspire her. I wonder, the teacher had an idea of like that was going to be the result, that you get somebody really excited to see the possibilities in this world, and then you realize that that possibility isn't real achievable for me.
It was really heartbreaking to watch that because at first I was like, oh my God, she's going to be able to find a way of getting the scholarship to this fancy prep school and, you know, like, this is amazing. And you were feeling very optimistic when you're watching that, and then to see what...
You watch her spirit become broken.
Yeah, it was really heartbreaking, more than a lot of the other flashbacks that I watched, because it was like you see that potential of someone and just sort of gone.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it was great to have her flashback too, because again, we haven't seen a lot of her in the past couple seasons. Well, I don't even remember when we were, I think maybe season one or two, like way, way back when they had beginning with her. But back to the present day, you know, we have Flocka with her whole, you know, makeup thing, and they're doing their makeup demos on the YouTube videos, which is nice comic relief. I'm really enjoying all that.
I love the you're going to smell like your abuela's pork.
Yes.
Because I
see you do remember a lot of this very well.
I do. Well, because I had an abuela, and I don't remember her cooking pork, but I, you know, it just resonated a little bit. Not doing my makeup with the seasoning and stuff like that, but I was like, hey, look at this.
Very creative. It was really, really good. She's like, you know, you're gonna smell like your abuela's pork, but you're gonna be fly. You're gonna look good, and I thought that was brilliant.
Yeah,
it's so much fun to have that comedic relief, but on the serious side, like you said, very super creative, and you know they're trying to take advantage of the situation right now
too,
in the right way.
They're doing what so many of us on the outside are
doing. Exactly, that's what I'm saying, and they're taking advantage of it in the right way. And I thought that was a really great thing to have. Yeah, because I love the whole contouring thing too. Is like the thing she keeps talking about every
single. She could probably help me out with mine.
I wish she could help me out with mine. I could use that. So, you know, we have them in their world, and you've got the what I always call the drug girls, you know, kind of doing their own thing. They wake up hungover from their syrup
concoction
that they had the night before. And then the other great thing that I've liked this season, too, is they have laid it kind of out in the real world trying to balance out getting a job. And again, we see how difficult it is for someone to come out from prison and be able to stay out there and be able to find a job, hold down a job, and be able to support themselves. And even though they do it in a comedic way, you know, she goes in and she's trying to get the job at the nail salon, and basically she's like, I buff circles around these sashimi bitches.
The writing is just hilarious.
And she's like, this is America, lady. Slavery ain't legal here.
Because what was the wage that they offered her?
Yeah, it was like, well, they basically said she had to pay them the $20 for the training.
Yes,
up to, you know, to be prepared
and,
to start.
And actually, you know, she says that slavery is illegal in America. Yeah. Actually, you look at the 13th Amendment and it's not. Slavery is legal if you are in prison.
Right.
So watch 13th if you want to know more about that.
And that's what I thought, again, was brilliant about the writing, because it was there, but it's almost like you have to dig a little deeper and you have to realize, oh my God, that's right. Like, it technically is. And that's why people can work in manual labor. They're in prison and they're not, you know,
paid
making
at all.
Any money. Yeah. But they kind of glossed over that, no pun intended with the nails, but kind of focused on the women that were working there and like, are they working, you know, for legal wages and everything else, because we've heard this before too. A lot of people that work in the garment industry and other places are getting way less than minimum wage. And so it made you kind of think too, like, because that is an issue too, besides the prison labor, is what is actually going out in the real world. and are these people making less than minimum wage? And so we kind of saw that with her, and she's trying to figure out now where she's going to be. And I think it's really great because, you know, in the season pass when she was going to be released, she didn't want to go because she didn't want to leave her daughter.
And then she gets a phone call.
Yeah.
And then she's asked, how's it going?
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, my God, it's great.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, I wonder, is that like a suit that she has to put on to be able to build herself up to keep going?
Yeah.
Or is it just too humiliating to say, this is not easy?
I think it's a little both. I think it's her way of projecting and a way of building the confidence, but it's also her character's way of being like, yeah, everything's great on the outside. And it's when she has that conversation with Gloria and, you know, this whole thing that Gloria doesn't actually tell her about the whole riot going on. And I don't know. I kind of feel like I guess she didn't want to because being the mom, she didn't want her to be worried about her daughter.
Right.
Like thinking as a mom, wouldn't you think... I don't know, it's kind
there
of
wasn't any good news that she was going to tell her. So listen, this riot started because your daughter got a hold of
That's
a gun and shot somebody.
Right.
She's Gloria would have to admit that she sort of failed as her pseudo
mother.
Right.
So it's like nobody's coming off good in this, and she wants to protect her too, and doesn't want to say, "Oh yeah, because you know your daughter had the," and now this riot is going on and it's ensuing. Because I think on the other hand too, she'd be very worried.
And what
as
if
well.
Somebody like tapped into the phone line and then Gloria said this, and then
now implicating people. Yeah. So, you know, I get where Gloria's coming from. Again, another really smart woman that I felt like I get it. If I was in her position, I don't know. I don't know. It's tough because I feel like I may say something. Have you watched the news? I don't know because it's hard to say being in someone else's shoes, but I almost feel like I wouldn't necessarily say it to that person who has somebody in that prison at that moment. Like, maybe if I was calling a loved one, I'd be like, oh, my God, holy shit. Like, there's a riot going on. You know, watch the news. Make sure we're okay. Like, it's crazy in here, but I'm okay kind of thing. Like, but I guess from her perspective, it was like you said, nobody comes off well. She's would have failed by watching out for her daughter. Then Aleda's going to be nervous about her own daughter being in there and wondering what's going on. So, but that was interesting that Gloria chose not to. You know, we had some other funny moments too with the guards. They're still there. The COs are the hostages, and something I'd never heard of with the brown note, the gross thing where supposedly if the vibration is just right,
who knew?
I had never idea if I'd ever heard of the brown note, but that was pretty funny little comedic moment. But on the serious side too, you see, COs now kind of dealing with what I felt like was, I don't want to say karma, but like they could see what
direct karma.
But seeing like what these women are dealing with on a daily basis and then kind of going back with people that have mental health issues that are never to me taken seriously enough.
I mean, what do you think if as part of training, and even the COs can even get paid for this when they're going through their training, that they have to spend a week as an inmate?
I know. I think it would be great. It's sort of what's happening now with Linda and now kind of stuck in. But I actually think that's a brilliant idea because it's a way of them really being able to connect and sympathize with the prisoners because they themselves have been in a situation like that and they now know what it's like to be on the other side. And I thought it was very important because when he was going through that and having that anxiety attack, Hopper, I think it's Hopper, the CEO that's going through it. And, you know, it really, as someone personally who has had anxiety attacks and panic attacks and how real they are, and if someone has not experienced them, they don't know how terrible they really are. I think it really brought to attention of what these women that might have even undiagnosed mental health situations face on a day-to-day situation in a place like that. And then, of course, you bring up the good thing about the food because, you know, in seasons past, Red and Gloria were in the kitchen. They had good food. And when it was run by the state and then when it was taken over by a private enterprise,
they just looking out for profits.
For profits and bottom lines and budgets. And they're like, we're going to cut all that out. We're going to give them the slop and the big oversized bags of frozen, congealed crap. And so the food that they have now is terrible.
Barely edible
and I think again, brilliant idea too of when Boo said, okay, well then they can have the food and they did that in episode 4. It's like, okay, yeah, you guys do need to eat. Here you go. You can have our slop now. And again, it's a way for them to experience what these women are dealing with three times a day. I think the whole thing with Judy King going out there in the cafeteria and the whole, like, basically slave trade there, it was reverse roles.
Oh, yeah.
Was so well done. They're like, we're going to take our stock public now. And, you know, they're putting her out there and they're asking for the highest bidder. And now all these women are trying to bid on who's, you know, Judy King's going to be with now.
As, like, they
as
own
their,
her.
As their,
they like, take her around in a leash.
As a leash. Oh, my God. It was just, it was so crazy. But, again, so well done because it's a hard way of being able to do that and get a, you know, it's a very fine line.
Yeah, because then you don't want the audience to start distancing themselves
right.
from these women.
Right. So how you do that, and it was so well done again, and just the whole, you know, auction of
yeah,
her.
So I, even when they did that, and you see, like, oh, these women are, you know, deteriorating, or they're, you know, becoming the evil mm-hmm. that they mm-hmm. that they hate, I did not lose any sympathy for them, but I wonder if it was off-putting to anybody. You can let us know if you think
yes,
it was
and Deborah
off-putting.
Battle, you're absolutely right that Litch was actually a federal penitentiary, not a state. So when it was run by the feds, they actually had better food than when it was handed over to
MCC.
Yeah. But thank you. See, that's why it's always great to have a chat, because they keep us honest. They keep us on our
Accountable.
Toes. And there are so many times where you do forget after seasons pass. And half the time, especially at the beginning of the season, when it's a new season again, I have to look back and I'm like, what was that person's name again? Because there's a lot of characters on there, and you see people, and they look very different than their headshots on when they're all fancy. You know, moving on from that, and you know, Leda obviously finds out, going back to her with Gloria, but that she clearly lied. She saw the news and finds out that there's a riot. Piscatella comes back. He shaved his beard now, in a way, because he doesn't want to have to deal with anyone pulling on it if they're going in for, like, he's ready to go all in. He's ready, like, hand to hand combat, like, put these women back in their place. Like, he does not have any time for this crap anymore, you know.
No comment.
I know, because you know.
To say something.
I know, but I'm just saying in general. Like, he's back. He's trying to do it and get in there as soon as possible. He's mm-hmm. like, this has already gone on way too long. This is ridiculous. There's no reason that
has,
this can't
by
be
this
over.
Point has his backstory begun?
No, it has not.
Oh
no, and I'm waiting anxiously for that, because even at the end of episode 6, we have not gotten to it yet. But we know that it's building, because we know, you know, Red is just can't stand him and wants to do everything she can to bring him down. And you have Red actually confronting Caputo at the porta potty, and basically, you know, furious, blaming him for hiring Piscatella. And, you know, the whole thing about, you know, going through his files. She's gone through his files.
He killed somebody.
That he killed an inmate in a previous job. And so she's furious now. And also, it's a good point. Like, why would that person be in a place like
that? That's how it works in life. I mean, it happens with police officers, too. I can't remember the Tamir Rice killing.
Yes.
So the two officers that rolled up on the 12-year-old kid who was playing with a gun mm-hmm. and shot him within seconds.
Right.
Very recently, one of the officers was fired because he didn't disclose that another department was about to punish him for something. Mm-hmm. And so he just resigned and transferred somewhere else. And that is a thing that happens way too regularly.
Well, and it happens all over the place in other jobs. Yeah. People are fired for misconduct, and then they move up in the next job and get hired in some fancier job and get paid twice as much.
Right. And not even fired. They're allowed to, like, resign or just request a transfer or just do something that gets them mm-hmm. off the hook mm-hmm. and on to the next mm-hmm. chapter of their life.
Exactly. And, so, you know, it's not unusual. And again, it sort of kind of dovetails with what's going on with Bailey, and because I haven't seen the whole season, kind of seeing where he goes as well and what kind of punishment he gets and, you know, what is his next job going to be? What's going to happen? But, you know, again, this because we've got to get to episode 6 really quickly. You know, we have Black Cindy, which is having her, like, spa time in the bathroom with Judy King, which is hilarious and gross.
Yeah. We'll leave it there.
Yeah, because it got a little detailed there. But, you know, I kind of gets to a good point again about Judy being the face of the riot, because, you know, Tacey's like, oh, she's got the one with the media attention.
Oh, for the press conference?
For the press conference coming up, and she's the one that can go out there and has the people that will believe her and everything. But Janae brings a good point, doesn't want her to kind of karaoke their real issues because she's never really had them. She's only been there for a couple months, always had special treatment, and they should be the ones speaking on her behalf. What do you think about that? I mean, and just the overall thing versus Tacey's point at the time was that Judy would be able to get it out to the masses more than they could. Like, she would have the face and the celebrity. And
in episode six, do they actually go through with the press conference?
They do.
Okay, so I thought that the way it went down was brilliant. So you let her start.
Yes.
And then you're like, no, bitch, move aside.
Yeah, exactly.
Let me tell you, from somebody who really experienced the hardcoreness of this. I mean, I wish they had let Judy go on for a little bit longer. Because I think Judy probably would have said what they prepped her to say.
I agree. I think it would have helped. But I also, again, it shows how smart Tacey is in the sense that I get her point is the fact that, yes, Judy's a celebrity. She's the one that will be the face. She's the one that everyone's going to believe.
I mean, now that you're looking here, now that we've got your attention.
The wealthy, you know, Martha Stewart-esque white woman that didn't really do a bad crime more than someone else that they'd be like, oh, who's that person? And, you know, typical kind of thing. Like, she is someone they could connect with. So I get where Tacey was going with, but I also see Janae's side of being like, yeah, well, she doesn't really speak for us. She doesn't know. So it was an interesting kind of thing that they're kind of battling out in this episode. But, you know, I do want to get to episode six because we've got like 5 minutes. But we see Coates finally come out and of hiding because, you know, the past previous episodes he's been being a creeper. He's been up in the air vents and in the ceiling tiles and like spying on Pensatucky and just that whole gross thing going on, which I still don't understand that relationship. And maybe you have a different perspective. I don't get it, and I don't like it.
I think it's probably real.
And that's what I was wondering.
It doesn't make sense, and you wonder, like, is this abuse, or is this, like, really...
How could she be attracted to after what was going on? Like, and I get it, and
well,
I think
maybe
it's probably
she
based...
was abused, and so she's comfortable with an abuser.
Right, and it brings up a good point.
And so you're having trouble, like, is this abuse? Is he taking advantage of her, or is this something that she is, you know, signing on to voluntarily? It's not cut and dry. And I think that's another theme that the show is trying to elevate,
to light,
that nothing is as cut and dry as you think it
is. There is no easy, like, back and forth kind of thing. Yeah. So, yeah, I find that creepy, but you bring up a good point about that, is, like, that's what she knows, and this probably obviously does happen in prison. We got to get to episode six, though, because we have the end with the Judy with the press conference, and then Tacey, as a rock star, takes it over, but brings out the good points. Basically says, you're free to go now, Judy. And at first, you know, I had that moment where I was like, maybe she won't leave. Maybe she's going to be like, I'm going to stay by with these women. But of course, she takes off. So we move to episode six, Flaming Hot Cheetos, literally, which is so great because they open with the Law and Order theme with Boo. And now they're having their own court and they're doing their own thing. And I love that she's trying to connect her with Saved by the Bell as her favorite show. And I agree with Boo because I know, like, inside and out, Golden Girls, inside and out. I could recite the lines. I could basically tell you when it happened. So I was like, yeah, Boo, you bring a good point. Like, if Saved by the Bell is your favorite show, you're going to know exactly what happened. And, you know, she didn't clearly know what was going on as well. She claimed that she knew. And that was so funny.
These women knew the legal system the way that it goes.
Yeah.
I mean, I've shown up for jury duty and had people around me being like, wait, which side is the prosecution?
Yeah.
I'm like...
Ugh. Yeah, exactly. So well done. And it also got the bigger picture of sort of these women are now sort of forming their own government, their own society in here during this riot period, which we'll get into in a second. But kind of focusing on Bailey, you know, he was released from the overnight being in jail and is not charged with anything clearly because there's nothing to charge him for at this point. You know, we have Elaida going out and doing her close-up on national TV because she's gotten in touch with the producer.
Yeah.
And the producer's like, yes, you were actually in prison. We need to have you. You need to come on. And, you know, she's like cussing up a storm. And it was very awkward because at first she's super nervous and stilted, doesn't know what to do. Then she breaks up and starts,
lets it rip
left and right and cussing left and right, which was a really funny moment. But again, a good point for someone who was in there and had to deal with that situation. You know, we're still in the same place with Alex and Piper and everybody in the lawn still trying to lay low. Then, of course, Nikki's doing her, like, therapy thing. On the other side, she's doing her thing.
She's so good.
So good. And dispensing drugs. And then, you know, Morello comes in and they've had we've been waiting for this moment for them to just go all out. And and it finally happens.
I was going to ask a question, but in my question was a giveaway. So I will refrain from my
future.
Question. Yeah.
Okay. Because I'm still not sure what's going to happen. Then, of course, we have Frida. And the whole thing with the bunker, because she's down there, she's bored, she's sitting around like, I have this whole space. And the brilliant part, again, about this writing is it makes it seem like she's in this tiny bunker this whole time, like this tiny little space. And you're like, yeah, for one person that's like hoarding food and everything over the years, like, makes sense. Like, that's all the space she would need. And then as it turns out, she starts inviting the women that she wants to kind of be with her at the end of time, basically. And so they all come and meet her. They're all like, oh, this is kind of cramped, this is kind of crowded. And then lo and behold, she opens up this door and it's like this incredible space. It's like so funny, like foosball and a basketball court and pool table and a, you know, everything that you could ever want and food for everyone. It was the most hilarious thing, and I'm just so excited now to see where this part of it goes, because now they're like in their own little world below everything else going on. So it was so great, and I love they have her all like crazy theme music just for her stuff this season, and I'm like, it's so
keeps
funny.
It a little light and
yes
moving.
It was so good. But it's like she has her own, and it reminds me of my dog, because my dog makes his own high-pitched bark when he sees a very particular neighbor. So it's like that. It's like that music, and you know she's up to something kind of silly. And, you know, so they're dealing with all that. Big thing, Tasty, with her flashback, with her meeting her birth mom for the first time. Mm. Again, it was so crushing and so awful. So sad.
In this episode, yes, they show where she thinks that her mom is going to come pick, yes, her up and take her.
Well, even from the very beginning, when she has that first meeting with her in the park, and I'm just saying it's her, the birth mom's husband. I don't know. It could, yeah, be boyfriend or whatever, but I'm just saying for all intents and purposes, the husband and her daughter then were there, and she does not introduce her as her
daughter.
Yeah. And that was already like, ooh, the red flag goes up. But you're thinking, okay, you kind of take the birth mom thing, like, wait, I haven't really had a chance to talk, I don't know, let me talk to them first, let me connect with you. So you're like, okay, I kind of buy it. But then at the end, when she's so excited to leave the home there, and she's 18, she's ready to go out from foster care, and then her mom basically just says, nope,
yeah,
we're not ready. It's just really, really sad. And I know we have to wrap it up, but the one last thing I wanted to mention, though, about the court thing that was so great is that these women gave her a really good punishment. You know,
community,
it was like
community
service.
Yeah.
And one crime does not define a person.
Yes.
So good.
Yes.
So, so good. This show
is
great.
This is the best political show on TV. House of Cards,
really,
Move Over.
House of Cards, Move Over. And the last thing I'll say is the very end when they end up burning up the Cheetos on the front lawn.
Yeah, so they give it back.
They grab all the Cheetos back. They're like, we need to make a stand.
They don't want the leverage held over them.
Over them, because, yeah, they're basically saying, you know, that she has
called
the
governor. We gave you Cheetos, and now you should give it
this
up.
Now you need to give us the hostages. So they're like, nope, we're going to burn all the Cheetos, which was a big deal, too.
Flaming,
and I love that.
Hot Cheetos.
Literally, and they were. Well, thank you so much, Chelsea, for
thank
being
you for
here
having me
tonight. It was so great having you, and you can come back anytime,
because
we're always next door for the
thank
Trump
thank
Report.
Thank you. I'll take you up on that.
And where can they find you in the meantime?
At Chelsea Galicia.
Yes, and you're on the Trump Report every, yep, week with myself.
And Justice is Served
and
on
Justice
BHL Wednesdays at 5.
Yeah, so thank you again for being here. And guys, we will not be here next Tuesday, July 4th, because we're celebrating
freedom.
Right, like these women want to do, at least someday. But we'll be back with episodes 7 and 8 on Tuesday, July 11th. Until then, bye.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.